The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook if you sign up for a two-week trial of their service. Audible has 40,000 titles available to download. For all the details, follow the links at guardian.co.uk/audible.
Hello and welcome to Music Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alexis Petridis, and coming up in today's podcast, Michael Gearer tells us about reforming his band Swans, what he thinks of music bloggers, and why he spits at fans that mosh at his gigs.
Three or four idiots were just kind of in their own world and not really listening to the music, and they were slamming into people, and like one guy had a bloody nose, and they were just acting like teenagers, which they weren't actually.
We've got Clinic, a white knight mix of Wild Beasts, and Gangs, again, in Singles Club. And one woman orchestra, Glasser, talks to us about her debut album, Ring. That's all in Music Weekly. Rosie Swash is here as usual. Hello, Rosie.
Hello, Alexis.
How are you doing? You're all right?
I'm very well. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. I'm good. I'm thriving. Thank you very much. And making his Music Weekly debut, it's Guardian writer Louis Patterson. Welcome, Louis.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Hey, no problem. You have gone into the belly of the beast and met the fearsome Michael Gearer of the Swans.
I did indeed. He was not exactly that fearsome, actually. He's quite sort of a... I guess the word for him would be sort of avuncular. Is that a word?
Yeah, that is a word.
It is definitely a word.
Kind of like a pleasant uncle or something like that. But he sat there with his huge sort of kind of Stetson-type hat and a very sort of large fat cigar and regaled me with lots of quite sort of amusing stories with some unpleasantness along the way. But
some unpleasantness is, of course, what Michael Gearer is known for.
Indeed, yeah.
His band Swans, they were formed in 1982. They recorded 11 albums before breaking up in 1997. They were known for their, it says here, bleak and minimal approach to making music. That's certainly one way of putting it. And also their painfully loud live shows, which were regularly stopped by police. Gearer got the band back together at the beginning of the year, and new album My Father Will Guide Me Up a Rope to the Sky was released last month. Louis, you spoke to Gearer, and he talked about touring, recording again. We'll hear all that after we hear a track from the new record. This is Reeling the Liars In.
Now the sun will hide beneath the ridge tonight. Clear flames of revenge will lift the black sky. And I will sing as you read that tone.
I was just looking at some old press, and there was a Sounds article that said one of your UK shows back in the 80s, I think three people were left in the room at the end of it. Is the current kind of current shows having that kind of an effect on an audience?
No, the exact opposite. You know, in those days, it was unheard of what we were doing, really. It was not expected. And people would be coming expecting this rock band from New York City, and they just were hit with this Gotterdammer stuff and didn't know what the hell to expect. And most of the people that came out of curiosity left immediately, of course. But I took to locking the door, too, to keep them in. And then in certain instances, turned off the lights also. So they really have to take it. No, nowadays, it's unheard of and preposterous for us, but the shows are sold out in general. And people come, I guess, vaguely knowing what to expect. There's a lot more dynamics now than there was certainly in the times you mentioned, and more melodicism involved. But in the large crescendoing bits, yeah, it's pretty intense. But I think it's a positive sound. It's not an assault.
I saw a clip on YouTube of one of the shows from the US leg, and a clip of you getting sort of quite physical with an audience member. I wondered what the story was behind that.
There were these people in doing this really stupid thing called moshing. There was a packed house in Chicago, and people were really enjoying the show, you know, and like moving, swaying, whatever. But the three or four idiots were just kind of in their own world and not really listening to the music, and they were slamming into people, and like one guy had a bloody nose, and they were just acting like teenagers, which they weren't actually. But they were just sort of fulfilling their stupid rock and roll idea of what you're supposed to do at a concert, you know, and which I find repulsive. So I got them to stop by spitting at them and getting their attention that way, and then grabbing the guy's hair and pulling up and screaming in his face. Yeah. and then they stopped. But I can't stand that kind of stuff. It's like they're not listening. They're just acting out what they've digested in the media. They're not paying attention, you know.
I guess Devendra Banhart is kind of, you could probably sort of say a protege of yours maybe, but he kind of came up through his earliest records came out on your Young God label, and he shows up on this album. How did the song come about, and what's the story behind it?
First of all, what does a protege mean? It's someone you take under your wing and guide, right? I think that was maybe a mistake I made with Devendra. Was trying to guide him. I should have just provided him a facility. Well, maybe that is what I did in a sense, but it's probably in his three albums he did with Young God, I probably was too intrusive on trying to protect him and teach him the ways of the world, like, you know, how to protect yourself from the sharks in the music business, and getting a little too paternal with him, and I think it scared him, and I'm also not an easy person to get along with necessarily, and I scared him a lot, I think, but working with him on the records we worked on together was just one of the highlights of my musical life. I couldn't believe it. He's just so talented. That song, which you fucking people make me sick. I can't say it without laughing, but I don't know how I came up with that title. But it seemed appropriate. The genesis of that was just developing these loops and sounds, random sounds while we were recording that I was going to compile and make into a little segue in the record. And the more it kept expanding, the more I thought it needed like a little song in the midst of that. So I went home and was playing my acoustic guitar kind of lazily with a notebook in front of me and looking at some music websites. I won't name them, but the typical, you know, influential blogs. And I just started writing the words, and I was looking at these kind of, to me, like repulsively stylish young people that I couldn't decide whether they needed to be raped or killed. And I came up with these words, and as I was singing it, for some reason I was singing it in sort of my sort of pathetic higher register and warbling a bit. And my God, how do I sound like here? And it was Devendra. So I recorded a rough version of it and then contacted Devendra and sent it to him and asked him if he would sing it. He said, of course. So he sang it. I asked him to sing like Elvis.
Oh, just sort of curious, but where did the album title, My Father Will Guide Us Up a Rope to the Sky, come from? What's that a reference to?
It was actually a song lyric from one of the songs I didn't use. It had to do with like picturing a rope of smoke going to the sky, and my father, who died of a stroke, is up in the sky. And at the time, I was still smoking heavily, and I couldn't breathe. It was a song called Oxygen, about not being able to breathe. I mean, asthma, smoking like a pack and a half, 2 packs of cigarettes a day. My mother also died of smoking-related diseases. And it was just about like that. But then I sort of extracted it, and now I look at it more as like sort of a hopeful image, you know, something new and following in the path that will lead you towards transcendence.
You say this while holding a cigar. Is this sort of a rare indulgence for you then?
No, I smoke one cigar a day now. Quit smoking cigarettes.
That was a public information film from Michael Gear of the Swans talking to Louis there. Louis, you know, there are very few bands, I think, whose reputation, sort of mythic reputation, precedes them in quite. I mean, Throbbing Gristle are one, but the Swans, you know, you hear all this stuff about, oh, you know, when they played in the late 80s, it was so loud and people were sick and all this, you know, all this kind of malarkey.
Yeah.
Is it difficult, do you think, for a band like this to kind of come back when there's this immense mythology that you can't possibly hope to live up to in a weird way around them?
Well, a little bit. I mean, it's interesting with Jira. I think there's been like kind of quite a strong sort of continuity that's run through his work. After Swans kind of split up, then he recorded for a long time as Angels of Light, which was kind of his solo project, I guess, but with other musicians coming in. And there was obviously sort of a break in the band name there, then I think that he really kind of, there was still sort of that intensity there, even though he was kind of playing acoustic. I remember seeing him just sort of play like a solo show a few years ago, and it was even just him and his hat and his guitar on stage, but it was still, you know, quite severe, really. And I think that this Swans record was originally written to be an Angels of Light record, yeah. but I think that he decided to just sort of, you know, it felt like Swans songs, and he wanted to kind of reapproach some of the old people that he's worked with in the past and kind of fill it out that way. So I don't really see that there's kind of like a massive break there, if that makes sense. He's just kind of doing what he always did, and if it's mellowed slightly over time, then...
So how does the new music compare to the old stuff? Because I am, you know, of enormously advanced years, and the Swans I knew, it was this kind of relentless, doom-laden, incredibly slow, punishing sort of assault.
Yeah, yeah.
Songs like, you know, Raping a Slave and A Hanging and A Screw and New Mind and stuff like that. How does the new stuff, I mean, it sounds to me, you know, like, what a sellout, you know, tunes and acoustic guitars and all that. I'm only joking, by the way, for anybody listening, I don't think Michael Gear is a sellout. Anyway, carry on.
I mean, kind of the late period albums had sort of mellowed a little in their yeah. own way. I mean, they'd kind of embraced a lot of other sort of instrumentation. And I think that to see them live now, then there's not really any kind of obvious break between sort of the older stuff that he plays and, mm-hmm. and the newer stuff.
Does he play stuff from the 80s?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, I mean, he plays for the gig that I saw was, I think it lasted an hour and 40 minutes. So there's time to play sort of pretty much everything off the new record and then sort of dredge back through the vaults for some of the earlier eviler stuff, but the loud stuff still rocks really hard. The new stuff also often rocks really hard, although there's sort of, you know, little glimmers of sunlight here and there.
Wicked. It all sounds great. I mean, it's very much reinvigorating my teenage love for Swansea. One of those bands that I have to say, and I don't wish to sound vulgar here, I kind of put to one side a little bit when I started getting laid on a regular basis, you know what I mean? A lot of kind of anger and resentment in that music that I found I had less need for when I started having sex. Anyway, Rosie, are you a fan of Swans? I mean, before your time, they're sort of...
I was born the year they were formed.
Wow.
Yeah.
My God.
But, don't you remember you came over to see me a couple of weeks ago in the office and I was listening to Swans and you said, it's that kind of day, is it?
you're a fan then?
Well, actually... hate them. I wanted to punish myself, Gira style. I'm a recent convert, actually. Louis wrote a piece for guardian.co.uk/music Label of Love about Young God.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, reprising. That was back earlier in the year.
And that made me kind of go back and look at them a bit. And a friend of mine is massively into both them and Angels of Light and made me a mixtape quite recently off the back of them getting back together. And I really like the new record and I really like some of the old stuff. I think there is a place for this kind of down-tuned, nihilistic, you know, talking about raping slaves and killing for company, and they fulfill it very well.
Yeah, definitely. If you want to hear a song about raping a slave, I would say the Swans are pretty much a one-stop band. I think they're an amazing group. I think they're genuinely, you know, at a time, I don't want to say when indie music was, you know, a really kind of, was a genuine alternative thing, but when it didn't get on the Radio 1, it didn't make the charts and da-da. Even within that context, I always remember thinking of them as, God almighty, this is a really extreme, heavy band. And it's lovely to see that they've sort of maintained some of that. My Father Will Guide Me, Up a Rope to the Sky by Swans is out now. Time for Singles Club. We've each brought in a recent tune to tell you about. We shall start off, as ever, with our guest. This one was chosen by Louis. That was the OPN White Knights remix of Wild Beasts Two Dancers, brought in by Louis. Louis, what did you bring this in for?
Well,
didn't mean it that way, Carol.
Let's see. I think this is kind of the sort of the final release from kind of the most recent sort of Wild Beast campaign. They've been touring the record all over, but I interviewed them the other week and they're just putting out a couple of slightly unusual for them, because I think that people think they have a slightly rustic kind of quality, but they've decided to put out two remix 12 inches, and this is my favourite of the tracks off that. It's done by a guy called One Note Tricks Point Never is his sort of recording artist name. I believe there was something about him on the Guardian website quite recently on the Anthony Hegarty sort of takeover week. But he is basically a New York producer and kind of remixer and named Daniel Lopatin. And he does something which is kind of, I guess it's kind of steeped in electronic kind of krautrock kind of music and things like that. It's largely sort of beatless, kind of very slow moving, drifty, but really, really sort of beautiful music. He's quite recently worked with Anthony Hegarty as well. One of the tracks from his One Note Tricks Point Never's Returnal album was kind of recreated on piano with Anthony Hegarty on vocals. And this track has kind of got a similar vibe. It's sort of a very long, kind of glacial, beautiful soundscapes. And a very sort of operatic, sort of vaulting vocal.
Yeah, this is not a man, clearly, a remixer who shies away from a fruity voice. I mean, that's, you know what I mean? This, you would have thought that it might be actually quite a difficult task to take a band like Wild Beast, because the vocals are so, whether you like them or not, you know, I mean, it's definitely very florid, kind of extravagant vocals.
Yeah,
it's quite difficult, I would imagine, to work something around. I thought this was great. I really, really liked it. And I'm not, by any stretch of the imagination, a fan of Wild Beast at all. I think they're utterly ridiculous band, but I thought this was a really, really good remix. Rosie, you are a huge fan of Wild Beast.
I am a huge fan of Wild Beast.
Did you like this remix, or do you think they're messing with a classic?
Saboteurs. No, I really liked it. I like this. There's four of them all together in there. I particularly like the John Hopkins remix on there of the same song, isn't it? Two Dancers Two, I think. I think the thing about Two Dancers, the album, was it accomplished the feat of layering lots of sounds, and but without you really realizing it was doing that. And all these remixes pull apart everything that constructed the record, and you know, particularly show you how important rhythm was to the album, and taking apart the grooves of it, which are not the things that necessarily spring to mind when people think of Wild Beast, but I think was the secret ingredient to why that album was so brilliant. So it kind of pays homage to what the Wild
Beast
did by taking it apart.
They definitely feel more spare, I think, and a lot less kind of, you know, it always feels to me, Wild Beast, like someone has wheeled, their music is like someone's wheeled in the sweet trolley restaurant and gone, eat it all now at once, and just piles them in. Whereas, and what I liked about this, as you say, is that sort of taking a part of that, and you see there's really good songcraft involved. His voice, I prefer actually set against electronic textures. The OPN White Knights remix of Wild Beast Two Dancers is out on November the 8th on Domino. And now, let's listen to Rosie's choice.
Back and forth you're rolling to another evening. What is it you're bringing in the time you're winging? All love is gone, and all love is gone, and it's gone, and it's gone, and it's gone.
That was I'm Aware by Clinic, Rosie's choice. Rosie, you're a Clinic fan, aren't you?
I'm a massive Clinic fan.
They will have written on their gravestone the perennially underrated Clinic, I think. They're you know what I mean? They're a band that's consistently made really, really interesting records for a very, very long time now.
Lots of
Without a, you know what I mean, a sniff of kind of crossover success.
But I think that's because they do neither, they're neither too strange for kind of people that really want to like or be seen to like really strange music, and they're not pop enough to really break that side of the commercial divide. So it's,
I think that's where the most interesting music happens.
Exactly,
myself, but
I know.
What is it about this? I mean, are you picking it just because it's the latest tune by Clinic?
Yes, I am. Yes. I do like it, but yeah, I am picking it. We were going to feature them on the podcast imminently, and they were about to tour the new album, and they've postponed it due to illness, which I hope isn't serious. It seems to me postponing a whole tour.
That does seem a bit bad, doesn't it?
Weeks before it happens. So yeah, I really hope everything's okay there, but I don't know. As I said, I've adored Clinic for a long time, but I've never actually interviewed them. And part of the reason I've never interviewed them is I've never given much thought as to why I love them so much. And I kind of didn't want know what I wanted to know from them. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes you hear an album, you think, I know exactly what I want to ask this musician in here. And I kind of love them, their willful mysteriousness.
They are sort of deliberately anonymous, aren't
exactly.
they?
Exactly.
They still wear the masks.
They still wear the masks. They wear these kind of pagan surgical outfits. And they always said, you know, it's not, they think that you should have more theatrical aspects and mysterious aspects of music. And that's why they do it. And it works, because they don't feel like you know a great deal about them. I think it's a bit of a horrible music journalism cliche to if you ever want to describe something as sounding vaguely wacky, is to say it's such and such on acid.
Yeah, you should never say that.
Or the modern one, on crack, if you were right. But, you know, so a lot of people have compared them to Velvet Underground, since you would say Velvet Underground on acid, but they actually do sound like they have done a lot of acid.
Just for the purposes of the benefit of the Guardian legal department.
We don't know for sure. We're not saying that the clinic have done acid.
I just think they take.
With Bubblegum, which is the current album, which is what I'm aware is from, there's a lot of this, like I'm in aware, very simple chord structures, familiar, you've probably heard them before. And they just do that and it's slightly skewed, it's slightly to one side.
Louis, the way you're talking about this, it sounds like you're a fan of Clinic 2.
Yeah, I found Bubblegum like a really interesting record, actually, because for me, Clinic, I really, really sort of adored, I adored them sort of when they turned up for the first time.
The kind of krautrocky, sort of rattly stuff they used to
do. Yeah, I think they were just like this really kind of amazing synthesis of like a lot of music that was quite sort of obscure at the time. There was sort of 60s garage psych stuff and the Monks and things like that in there. And they seemed to put it together in a really sort of kind of fascinating way. But my problem was that I think I've probably reviewed them sort of quite harshly in the past, because I feel like they didn't really, it was almost such a perfect synthesis that they kind of struggled to expand on it for a few records. I think it was kind of like they didn't know quite where they were taking it. But this album, Bubblegum, actually kind of adds all kinds of new instruments and things, and it kind of tones down that sort of clattering sort of garage.
I'm Aware by Clinic is the first single from the album Bubblegum, which is out now. I like it. Everyone around the table seems to like it. Perhaps you should go out and buy it. You might like it too. Anyway, this is My Choice.
Oh, when you're cold, I'll be there, hold you tight.
That was The Gangs, or Gangs, however you want to pronounce it, cover of Sade's By Your Side. I've had Gangs or Gangs on Singles Club before. We played the Gordy Side of Town off their album, and you know, it had to be said, to widespread dismay from the listeners, who wrote in and said, oh, you know, well, this is terrible, it sounds like George Michael, it sounds like it's something you'd hear in the background of, you know, in Costa Coffee or something like that. To which I say, right, I'm going to play some more at you. It's probably my favourite album of the year, the Gangs album. This is part of a sort of online radio session thing they've done. It's a cover of Sade track. I just think it's beautiful. I think it's absolutely beautiful. I think that what they're doing is, you know, they're working with kind of, you know, it's smooth music. It's kind of, but it's done in a totally sincere way. It's not meant in a sort of arched eyebrow, ironic, hipster way. And they clearly really love this kind of music. Mm-hmm. And I actually quite like a lot of it as well myself. And I think their love of it comes out in this cover version. You know what I mean? They picked an amazing song. They haven't picked an obvious Sade song. And they've just done a fantastic job. The guy's voice is brilliant. But I shall throw this open to the floor. Louis.
I like it. I remember reading about the record that it was sort of deliberately set at a kind of a specific kind of BPM of sort of 80, that kind of like sort of slow jammy kind of feel. And I mean, I think they're sort of a really interesting band. Are they kind of connected to Bon Iver?
There's members of Bon Iver. Yeah. They're kind of a sort of that American, slightly beardy, you know, alt rock. I mean, you know, let's not call them a supergroup. You know, we're they're not them Crooked Vultures. You know?
No.
But it's people who are known for being in other bands. Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, even sort of there even seems to be sort of in the American sort of alternative underground sort of contingent. Then there are people that are fans of that kind of smooth music. I mean, I remember sort of Will Oldham covering Usher and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting that, you know, sort of the two go together. But I mean, there seems to be a sort of a smoothness. that's kind of creeping back into kind of alternative music, actually. I mean, the guy, One Note Tricks Point Never, that I that did the Wild Beast remix that we played a little bit earlier, he's also in this a production duo called Games that kind of...
Oh, right, yes, yes, I'm aware of their work.
...are in this fairly sort of similar territory of kind of, you know, I think they sort of pitch pop songs down and they try and get that sort of slow jam kind of
yeah,
feel. Yeah. And it's got sort of a slightly kind of psychedelic quality though.
Yeah, it has a woozy kind of cough syrupy quality to it, which I really, really like, I think. Rosie.
I'm not ashamed to say that I love Sade.
No, nothing wrong with loving Sade.
Why should you?
Yeah,
why
exactly.
should
you? Come Sade's on.
Sade's brilliant.
I like the fact that she doesn't do very much, and every so often she just comes along, releases an album. You never hear from her again for another 10 years, releases another one. I really like this when it came out. But one thing I do think about her songs is that because of her voice, which you obviously want to put at the forefront of any track, I have occasionally found the production on and the arrangement of her recent stuff a little boring. And so I like that in this cover, they haven't done anything to detract from the voice. I think the guy who sings this does so in a beautiful way is distorted to a degree, or it's put through
all the tune and stuff like that, yeah,
but it still sounds absolutely beautiful. And instead they've messed around with the weakest part of any Sade song, which is kind of the, you know, I guess Lovers Rocky
arrangement
composition at the back, messed around with that and left the melody and the beautiful voice at the front, so it works.
I suppose the question is though, then, you know, kind of why listen to this sort of music when you could listen to sort of the authentic kind of, you know, real thing.
That's a really good point. It's something I've been thinking about a lot recently, because, you know, topic of my age always seems to come up on the podcast, but I am of an age now where I'm getting a lot of music that I loved when I was 17, 18, replayed at me by 17 or 18 year olds. I went to see a band called Yuck. I'm sure you're aware of their work.
Of
used
course,
to be
yeah.
Was that band Cajun Dance Party? It's 2000. And I mean, they just sounded, they were great, but they sound exactly like Dinosaur Jr. I mean, really, and I sort of thought, at what point, if I wanted to listen to music like this, would I pull your record out rather than You're Living All Over Me by Dinosaur Jr., you know? Mm. And it's an interesting point, the one you make. I think there's something that Gangs and also Aerial Pink, another band working for Seminary, bring to the party, which is they kind of up the oddness a little bit. Not so much, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That it overwhelms it, but there's something kind of weird and psychedelic, or they draw that out of this sort of FM rock or kind of 80s kind of smooth pop or slow jammy kind of stuff. And that, I guess, is what, you know. But, I mean, I listen to Magic FM all the time, so, you know. So there you go. So a bit of both for me. By Your Side from Gangs is out now as a free download from the Daytrotter website, I believe. Go there. Right. There's three other tracks as well. Go and download it. Some comments from our lovely listeners next. Now, I chose a track from Tal M. Klein on Singles Club last week. And would you believe the artist himself posted comments on the Music Weekly page? Right on, Tal M. Klein. Tal M. Klein writes, right, well, I am Tal M. Klein. The real one. The one that's apparently so hard to find on the internet, Rosie. Whoa.
Took it a little seriously.
He took this a bit bad. I've tried to search for my name in every search engine, dear, and all pages link page to me. So let's just call a spade and say you never bothered even looking me up.
I think it's fair to say I haven't Googled Tal M. Klein as much as
Tal M. Klein has Googled Tal M. Klein. Alexa, I'm grateful for the review and I'm glad you dug the tune. Although I agree that my name of my label, Anilligital, is a poor one. It certainly is. We've been running it since 1996 when I was 19 years old. And going by the name Transcenden, and we've just never bothered changing the label name, even though I've since shared the Transcenden name in 2004.
This guy sounds quite intense.
I mean, you wouldn't think it, but his music is kind
really
of quite nice, new Balearic.
I just said I didn't really like it.
You didn't give it a kicking, but there wasn't much love for Tal M. Klein.
I couldn't find out much about him on the internet. I found it a little dull.
Yeah, you didn't look him up.
Thin
White Dork, moving on swiftly. Thin White Dork writes, Mon the Disco Dads.
One for me.
Loving Singles Club. Never fails to reveal something that is in some way excellent. Thanks for opening my ears. Hey, a pleasure, Thin White Dork. Laronio1 writes, Hello, sheeple. Nice one. So, can anyone recommend further new Balearic tracks? Louis.
Well, we need BBT in, don't we?
Huh?
We need Ben Beaumont Thomas.
We do. I would say I am fond of the work of Aeroplane. I am fond of a slightly more disco, drugged out kind of new disco tip. I think Marquee's productions are just amazing. Who are the new Balearic Notes? Okay, anybody you come spring to mind, Louis, you're a fan of this stuff?
This year, the stuff that I really liked, there was a Prince Thomas album earlier this year, which I remember playing quite a lot. And was there a Lindstrom?
It's Lindstrom album and Christabel's album. Is brilliant. Of course, that's really nice. One place I can recommend, or two places I can recommend, if you want to keep up with this stuff, if you subscribe to the newsletters from Fonica and Juno, two dance shops, one in Leeds, one in London, they will serve you up with everything that's coming out, and provide MP3 clips for you to listen to. This is how I discover all this stuff, my immense knowledge of new Balearic music. So check them out. Fonica and Juno. Thanks again for your comments. Remember, guardian.co.uk/musicweekly is the place to leave them. Our next artist interview is with LA musician Cameron Mesereau. Cameron Mesereau? Yeah, Cameron Mesereau, we'll go for that, a.k.a. Glasser. Paul Lester described her as a weird version of Enya that James Cameron might have dreamed up. Nice one. Her debut album, Ring, was released on True Panther Sounds a couple of weeks ago, so we sent Emma Warren along to meet her. But first, let's hear the single Mirage.
You made your debut album Ring on GarageBand. Did that appeal to you from a kind of lo-fi DIY point of view, especially given you have a bit of a background in the world of punk?
The songs were written in GarageBand, but I didn't end up using GarageBand to the final step. I made sketches of songs on it, and then what I did was take the songs to my producers. First I worked with Ariel Rekshed in LA, and he's a good friend and an amazing producer, and he did about two-thirds of my record, and was extremely, extremely helpful, as were Van Rivers and the Subliminal Kid, when I later worked with them in Stockholm, in sort of putting the pieces of my GarageBand demos together into sort of a much larger scale and scope, and really just breathing new life into them for me, which is really exciting. It can be really nice to hear it as though it's being made again for the first time, you know.
Now, one of the things I've heard you talking about the record is in terms of expression and actually being able to find kind of what you sound like rather than making a record for a specific purpose with, you know, Yelps and all. Yeah. Is that something that you would agree with?
Yes, absolutely. That was a main objective in making this. And frankly, I think it's the reason that that I feel like, you know, proud of it, is because it was a real hurdle to overcome, feeling, you know, the pressure of wanting to make something that everyone could enjoy, and rather just saying, well, I'm just gonna make what I make, and hopefully it will work out.
I really like the sound of the tandem organ that you made.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that is part of an ongoing collaboration called Hourglass. We made a bifurcated pump organ, meaning that there were two sets of wind systems and two keyboards. And I made it with my friend Taube Auerbach. And she had to pump her pedals at her feet in order for my keyboard to make any noise, and I had to pump the pedals at my feet in order for her keyboard to make any noise, and we had this sort of giant freak instrument made, and we played it in a gallery in New York for about a month and a half straight.
You've had some interesting remixes, Jamie from the XX, and
yeah,
I think DeLorean as well. If you're selecting remixes for the next bunch of things, who would you be choosing?
Oh, wow. You know, I have a tendency to want to give jobs to people that they're not used to doing. So it was totally thrilling to have all of the people do remixes for me that have done them so far. And I have a Lindstrom remix coming up of Mirage, which is really exciting for me. But I think if I were going to have my like ideal person remix a song, it would have to be someone like Chevy Chase or something, like someone who's got no background in doing something like that. Maybe even another music person who's not even in that game at all. Like, well, Chevy Chase used to be in Steely Dan. I would love a Steely Dan remix. Maybe Joni Mitchell. Whatever happened to giving her new jobs?
That was Glasser talking with Emma Warren there. Are we a fan? Are we fans? Are we a fan? I sound like Margaret Thatcher. Are we fans of her album, Rosie?
Yes, I am.
What do you like about it? She's sort of Bjorky.
That's exactly what I was going to say. She's been compared a lot to the other singer-songwriter she's been compared a lot to is Zola Jesus. But actually, I think Zola Jesus is a lot more... We had her on Singles Club a couple of weeks ago. The song we heard at the beginning was almost quite a tallow disco, Glass Candy style. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was thinking Glass Candy or sort of Chromatics kind of feel to
it. So kind of a less wayward version of something that Bjork might do, but it's definitely similarities. There is something about her. I do really like her, and she came across as extremely enthusiastic in a very nice, convincing way in that interview, I have to say. But there's something about her which just seems almost made up for the ultimate internet age musician. You know, the, like,
in what sense? What do you?
Well, just she. I mean, she looks like Joanna Newsom. She lives in New York. She made her debut album on GarageBand. Well, she conceived it on GarageBand. She's, you know, she calls herself an arranger, and she's not an artist. She doesn't seem to exist in any obvious genre, but seems to borrow from quite a lot.
It is almost sort of the 2010 checklist.
Exactly. It's like, oh, so cool. And I saw a video of her playing the tandem organ, which is like 10 foot long, with artist called, I think I'm pronouncing this correctly, Torba Obash, maybe another.
Oh, him, yeah, he's brilliant.
It's a woman actually, but but you know, it felt a little. Yeah,
I knew that. I was just checking that you did after the Talem Klein debacle.
Yeah, oh,
I'm just
God. Yeah, I did. I googled the hell out of this one. I promise. that aside, so there's that side of it which you just think, oh, it seems to fit things too well. But I do really like the album.
Louis, what are your feelings here?
Well, I have seen that the record's been sort of getting, you know, quite a lot of critical praise, and I would echo Rosie definitely on saying that it's kind of got a real kind of Glass Candy feel, not just sort of a disco thing, but sort of bits of kind of that sort of freestyle sort of sound in there. And I think kind of seems to be quite sort of, you know, not necessarily made for the dance floor, but quite sort of intricately put together the sounds. I mean, I wonder if this kind of all sort of harks back to Bat for Lashes a little bit, when kind of she came out.
Interesting,
yeah. It's kind of got that sort of slightly rhythmic kind of witchy feel to it, but still sort of, you know, erring on the side of accessible, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. No, it's nothing to frighten the horses.
No, not at all.
There's anything wrong with that. Interesting that she wants to be remixed by Steely Dan. I'm really trying at the moment with Steely Dan.
Did she not say Chevy Chase?
She did say Chevy Chase, but I haven't been listening to Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
I spent last night listening to Steely Dan and attempt to get into them, because I'm perfectly prepared to believe it's not Steely Dan's fault that I hate them so much, it's me. I listened to Asia. Are either of you familiar with Steely Dan's album, Asia?
I have heard that, yeah.
Bloody awful.
No, it's not good.
It's like Frasier and Niles Crane formed a band. It would sound like that.
I like the sound of that. But
and I want them
more
to
than
do
the sound
a remix
of Steely
of
Dan's
Glasser.
Asia.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be amazing. A Frasier and Niles Crane remix. We're so out there. Glasser's debut album, Ring, is out now on True Panther Sounds. That's all for this week. Thanks for coming in, Louis. It's been a pleasure. I hope you come in again.
Thank you very much. I would love to.
Excellent.
Anytime.
And we will see you next week, Rosie. My thanks also to producer Pete, as ever. I'm Alexis Petridis. Thanks for listening, Sensation Seekers.
Don't forget to start your free 14-day trial of audible.co.uk and to download your free audiobook. head to guardian.co.uk/audible.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.